It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Tuesday. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky. A lot of stuff that we didn't actually get to on Monday's show that we want to finish up for today. We want to get into the Kyle Lowry trade that wasn't. Whether or not, Andy, the Lakers would have been better off making that deal.
Yeah, a lot of people on Lakers Twitter were revisiting that, so we're going to join in on it, revisit it as well.
And then also, too, this idea of running it back. We talked on Monday's show about how players Wes Matthews, Dennis Schroeder, everyone on down except Montrez, was very enthusiastic about the idea of running it back next year. Almost like let's try to keep the band together and see what we can do as a team. Whether or not that's a good idea, that sort of frames the entire conversation for the offseason for the Lakers. We are going to start today, though, with Frank Vogel, because he is a guy, Andy, that was sort of, you know, hasn't really been talked about a lot in terms of offseason stuff for the Lakers, but he is entering the final year of his contract, which is always an awkward place for a coach to be. A few weeks ago, there was some reports that the Lakers would be working on an extension for him. Nobody thought twice about it because the Lakers were in good shape and everybody likes Frank Vogel. But now it becomes a little bit of a larger question as to what they're going to do, given the first round exit and all this other stuff. How much of a priority should he be? And so we'll talk about that, whether or not our perceptions of him have changed at all. I do want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Enjoyment isn't the end game. It's the whole game at only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. How big a priority, Andy, should Vogel be in this offseason? It is a weird thing to be a coach in the final year of your contract when you're coaching superstars, particularly.
I mean, if it was of importance reportedly just 2 months ago, and it's important to remember, too, that it wasn't – what was being reported wasn't just that the Lakers were interested in getting an extension going with Frank Vogel, that they were the ones actually initiating this.
Yeah, they wanted to get it done.
So it's not like Frank Vogel's agent was in their ear and this was something that they were looking to avoid any type of hostility from Vogel in a lame duck year or something. This was being reported as something they wanted to do. So – I can't think of what would necessarily change that drastically that all of a sudden they would have cold feet about Frank Vogel. Like, this is the one thing I can think of, and it makes sense just because Jason Kidd was in the news so much with him being linked to the Portland Blazers job because Damian Lillard publicly said that's what he wanted. Jason Kidd publicly took himself out of the running, saying that he didn't want to be like a distraction,
right,
in terms
and
of.
And that in turn led Lakers conspiracy Twitter to wonder whether or not that he's got a better offer in mind. And that better offer might be the Lakers.
I'm not saying I buy into it. I'm saying this is the reason you could potentially buy into that type of rumor mill would be if you think that Kidd is really the brains behind these schemes, or like in terms of what gets implemented on both sides of the ball, or if you think that Frank Vogel doesn't really get the buy-in from LeBron or from AD or, you know, like the other people on this team who really matters, and it's actually Kidd, and Kidd is really getting everything going and does this on behalf of Vogel, and the things that work really well on this front happen
not really because of Vogel, almost in spite of Vogel. Right.
I'm not saying it's what I believe. I'm saying this would be the reason if you were buying into the idea that Jason Kidd was ultimately staying around the Lakers because he thinks he's that close to getting the job, therefore the Lakers would somehow have any type of reservation about giving Vogel that extension.
Or that the threat of Jason Kidd leaving is so great to them, and they love Jason Kidd so much. The idea is like, you know, we have to pounce on this now, even if it means stabbing in the back this guy that we think has done a nice job. And you know, it's not Frank Vogel. It's all about Jay. I don't buy any of it. But The other part of that that leaves it open is, you know, look, the season obviously finished in a disappointing way. And again, we're talking about the sort of conspiracy theory corners of Twitter, of Lakers social media. And
some people call those Twitter.
Right. Just regular. Doesn't
yeah,
need
I mean, is there another kind? I'm not aware of it.
And it leads to my other question, which is, because neither we talked on Monday's show, neither one of us would let Vogel go, like based on what happened this year.
Not unless there is a clearly something better choice. Better choice. I mean, like I don't, a no-brainer, obvious better choice.
And I don't see that person. It gets to that question of whether or not your perception of Vogel has changed because of the results. And for a lot of people, and this is frustration and it's anger over how things finished and all that kind of stuff. But last year in the playoffs, the perception was that Vogel hit every button perfectly. And, you know, you need to swap out this guy, you know, in a series, you do it. You start the second half with Markieff Morris here instead of, you do it. And he was willing to do all this stuff and it all worked. And they won a title in very convincing fashion, you know, along the way. They were quite dominant. This year, obviously, it didn't happen. Some of the buttons didn't, you know, he tried to push, didn't work as well. I would argue he didn't have nearly as many buttons to push. Some of the buttons were broken. Some of the buttons didn't go anywhere. But be that as it may, it didn't work as well. And so I don't think less of him as a coach this year. In some ways, I actually think more of him. But I'm wondering what you think.
We talked about this in a few pods during the playoffs. I think Vogel was slow to recognize the need to emphasize offense more or size less. Those have been two tenets of Frank Vogel's, you know, I think coaching identity with the Lakers or period. He is very defense first and he covets size. Like he really values size out there. We saw that with the way he used Anthony Davis and either Dwight or JaVale last year. We saw with what he was trying to do with Anthony Davis and Andre Drummond, which at times did work very well, but it was also clunky at times. And
but clarify, you don't mean that he was slow to recognize that, hey, we're having trouble scoring the ball, just that you mean to make changes that would be more offensive weighted
yes,
as opposed to
yes, right. Yes, okay. Exactly. I've spoken about that many sure. times. I think Frank Vogel is defense first at times to a fault. And I think is sometimes slow to make the type of adjustments that could on paper hurt the defense, but possibly loosen up the offense. It doesn't make me think the Lakers should move away from him or make me think drastically differently of him. I do think though, I was thinking about this heading into this show. I do think though, that there is an importance now that we've seen after 2 years for Vogel to either become a better offensive coach himself or add somebody to the mm-hmm. staff who's better with offense. Like the last two seasons.
This was a problem in Orlando as well.
It was a problem in Indiana, Brian.
Yeah, he didn't like run his particularly good offenses.
Right, but his teams in Indiana, like the ones that were legitimately good, like could go deep in the playoffs, their offensive ratings were still usually average or below, pretty pedestrian. Mm-hmm. So there's a pattern here. And like I don't know how much of this is directly Vogel versus who's surrounding him, particularly this season, covering it virtually because of all the COVID restrictions,
sure.
which was made it particularly hard to ascertain. But I do think, though, that some type of change either in Vogel's personal philosophy or the people surrounding him is necessary. That's what I would say.
It's interesting. This gets to a little bit of that conversation, which you know we'll try to get to today, or if not, we'll certainly get to this week and a bunch of times over the offseason over running it back. You know, like how much of this is Vogel, how much of this is personnel, how much of this is the limitations of the people that they put around LeBron and AD, particularly when LeBron and AD aren't available. And my perception of Vogel, when I say in certain ways it improved, you know, before we get off this and get to Kyle Lowry, is based on how well they held together with very limited talent when LeBron and AD were out. You know, I thought the fact that they were able to maintain that status as, you know, one of the best defensive teams in the league, despite what was going on around them, that's all buy-in and effort. And that to me, that speaks to the coach.
Yeah, and he's a great defensive coach. We've talked about before. He's a great communicator.
Right, but I just mean in terms of, you know, there was buy-in there that goes beyond X's and O's and scheme.
No, that's part of the communication I'm talking about.
Sure, and so I just think that for a lot of the year, you know, my argument was he needed to be more of a coach of the year candidate. There were some things in the postseason I didn't love either, but I just think they were playing with such a shorthand, it's really hard for me to be critical. So we'll see. You know, I do think it needs to be a priority to get him an extension just to make sure you don't enter a crucial season with LeBron and AD. And, you know, next year is really important. And to have a coaching thing hanging over the head of the team, if they have a 4-game losing streak at the beginning of the year, whatever it might be, is just something that they don't need. If they think they are happy with Vogel and don't see an easy alternative right around the corner, then they need to get it taken care of. That would be my evaluation of that this offseason. Next, Andy, though, let's talk about, look back a little bit of the season and the trade that wasn't, because it would have both impact for perhaps what we saw down the stretch, but also what the Lakers will be doing this offseason. We'll look at the Kyle Lowry trade that never happened next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Credit Karma. Credit Karma has always been there to help you make better financial decisions, and now they want to help even more. With a Credit Karma money spend account, you can be rewarded for great money habits. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. Just pay with your debit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot, and your instant Karma cash will be added to your spend account. Credit Karma Money has already given away $3 million in instant karma to over 50,000 Credit Karma members and counting. Open your FDIC-insured spend account for free. No minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, free withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. Now only from June 8th to June 30th. If you make a purchase between then, you will be automatically entered to win $1 million. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account. Start winning instant karma. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free. Start winning instant karma. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant Karma, sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MB Bank Incorporated. Member FDIC. Maximum balance. Transfer limits apply. Credit Karma money. Progress starts here. Also finishes.
Oh, man. Go get myself a coffee. I do want to also let people know that Locked On Lakers brought to you
not by... Not going too deep in the woods. Ain't my fault.
RockAuto.com. You know what they say about instant karma, Andy? Mm-hmm. It's going to get you. RockAuto, I'm not a car guy, but there's some things I've learned how to do. I can figure out by watching YouTube or watching somebody else get it. Like, so if I go into a store, I know what I want to be able to do, and I don't want to be talked out of it by some guy behind the counter who's going to ask me a bunch of questions and rattle my confidence in, you know, my whatever confidence I have in doing things myself. You know, another thing about it, Andy, chain stores, they got different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers like you and me. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody, and they are reliably low, 20, 30, even 50% lower than chain stores or what you get at a dealership. They have everything you need for your daily driver, for your classic, whatever it is. So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box, so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. Andy, should the Lakers have traded for Kyle Lowry? He was out there. Should they have done it?
It depends a lot on if you're evaluating the trade for what would have happened this year versus what will happen moving forward. Mm-hmm. In terms of
start with what would have happened this year. Would we be talking about games right now instead of offseason issues and trades that never happened?
We might be. I think it is possible that with a fully healthy Kyle Lowry in place of a Dennis Schroeder that did not play well at all, you would not have KCP.
But he didn't finish. Schroeder did have a couple of good games in the series.
He had a good, but he did not have.
He wasn't universally terrible.
No, but he was not universally good either, or even close.
That's true.
I mean, his playoffs were not good.
When he was good, he was really good. And when he was bad, he was terrible. And really what they needed was some consistency.
I think on balance, Schroeder did not have a good playoffs. And I don't think there's really any way around
it. I'm not arguing with that.
He didn't play well in the play-in game. I mean, he wasn't great. And, you know, especially when you take into account the whole, you know, COVID, not COVID of it all. Like, I think the image of Dennis Schroeder over the last month and a half, I don't think was a particularly positive one. And then you wouldn't have THT, but THT's role during the playoffs was fairly limited.
And
you
know, KCP would have been part
right,
of that.
Who, but I said that earlier, but right. KCP was not available for some of this anyway, and certainly wasn't at 100% regardless. I think Kyle Lowry's presence could have been helpful to get this team maybe into another round, but I don't think they're going to win a championship with LeBron banged up and AD with his health the way it was. You know, I mean, with constantly having to worry about that groin strain, you know, like how many more games is he a game time decision leading up to all this? So I don't think Kyle Lowry ultimately makes the type of difference that Laker fans and the organization were looking for when they began this season.
I think that's fair. I mean, it's, you never, you know, if you make the deal, the other thing is too, you don't know where you are. Like Schroeder, Lowry wouldn't have been out of the lineup in theory for that 2 weeks that like you mentioned, the COVID, not COVID, that Schroeder was out. So maybe that makes it so the Lakers aren't in the play-in game, or you know, they finish as a six and now they're playing the Clippers or whatever it maybe. Is, like, or Denver. I mean, like, I if the other guys get hurt, if Anthony Davis gets hurt and stays that way, and you know, there was some reporting out Tuesday that it looks like, you know, it would be like 2 weeks. You know, would be another 2 weeks before he'd start to feel better. They wouldn't have had that kind of time. If he's not healthy, they're ultimately not going to win a title.
Right.
And I feel like if you re-sign THT this offseason, and he is a priority, if you re-sign Schroeder to a decent number and you keep, like, that is a lot of depth that you're giving up to bring in Lowry, who was, you know, pretty good down the stretch, not brilliant, but pretty good. And obviously just has a better track record as a lead guard than Dennis Schroeder. He's a better player than Dennis Schroeder,
particularly in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. The offseason question, though, is really the hard one.
That's what makes this a really interesting question.
You are giving up on Schroeder. I mean, if you make this trade, you're jettisoning a lot of salary. You're getting rid of KCP salary. You're getting rid of Schroeder salary, and theoretically, then can write off Lowry at the end of the year if you don't want to keep him. The problem is, if you're the Lakers, still don't have a lot of room to go out and sign a bunch of people. It's not it's not that like if you let Lowry walk after that deal, you've got tons of cap space to work.
Oh no,
with.
No. If you make that deal, you are making that deal to re-sign Kyle Lowry.
And
period.
The idea that you would sign Lowry both of us are massive Kyle Lowry fans.
Absolutely.
Love Kyle Lowry. We should all find joy in things in our life in the way that Kyle Lowry finds joy in taking charges. Like something, I wish that kind of happiness on everyone. But he's 35 years old. He played 46 games this year. He played 58 games last year, which is fewer than they played, I think. And then 65 the year before, 60 in 2016. He hasn't played 80 games, or he's played 75 games twice going back to 2014, 2015. That is a lot. Especially when you're already dealing with Anthony Davis, who at 28 has a pretty extensive injury history at this point. To put everything in with Kyle Lowry and re-sign him, and that's where all your money is going and all of your flexibility is going, that would make me incredibly nervous. It reminds me of an older player version of why the Lakers traded Andrew Bynum. Like, it's one thing to have Andrew Bynum, to have him on a rookie deal or a smaller deal, but like, you do not want to be the person who has to pay what it's going to require to bring him onto a, you know, like to an extension. And I feel a little bit like that with Lowry at age 35, but it's not even so much what you do this year as it you are taking a massive risk going forward that I ultimately don't think I would have wanted to do.
The flip side of that, though, and I mean, I understand where you're coming from. The flip side, though, is how much comfort do you feel moving forward long term with Dennis Schroeder, who's going to end up really expensive regardless. He may not be as expensive as Dennis Schroeder thought he was going to be, or Dennis Schroeder pictured himself being.
And your question, how much does he make relative to Lowry, is also an interesting one. I'm not sure how much less expensive he's going to be, or more expensive, or whatever, than Kyle Lowry.
He could end up more expensive, or if nothing else, on a longer term deal. And here is a big difference between Kyle Lowry and Dennis Schroeder. Remove that health question. Lowry is not just a better player. Lowry is a definitive starting point guard in this league. Like that caliber of player.
No question.
He has been a multi-time all-star. He was all-star caliber last year, if not an actual all-star. Dennis Schroeder is not an ideal starter. I think he is a legitimate starter, but he is not. I think this season played it out. He is somebody better suited to be an incredibly important reserve. I think that is the best role for Dennis Schroeder. You are going to be paying, if you re-sign him, starter money.
Sure. And look, I can argue both sides of this very, very happily. You know, Lowry.
And I think Lowry is a more reliable guy in general.
He's always more reliable, but he's a better player than Dennis Schroeder. But but he's also significantly older. And if you believe that the decline is kind of coming, the flip side of the decline is you decline a lot slower when you're the point guard, a lead point guard on a team with LeBron James, where LeBron will end up doing a lot of that work for you, and or at least sharing it with you. It just makes me nervous. He's a guy who, has played so hard throughout his career. And as we've learned with LeBron showed himself to be kind of mortal this year. And you can no longer assume that LeBron will just be bulletproof and not get hurt. And if he does get hurt, he'll be back in a week. Like all that stuff. He's still pretty durable, I think, relative to a lot of other stars. He's not the only star in the league who gets hurt, but he's not indestructible anymore. And that's LeBron. AD is already, like that. And now you're going to add one more dude to it who makes a lot of money. So I think that, with the depth issues that we would have had this year, combined with the nervousness and a belief that THT is going to be a really good player for them, I don't have a problem, at the very least, with why they said no.
No,
I don't think it was an obviously missed opportunity.
It may not be, but they are going to be left making some decisions with Schroeder moving forward that I think feel more uncomfortable now than they pictured having to make them when they first brought in Schroeder.
Right. Because is he the guy who played well when those two guys were out and kind of like put up really nice numbers without LeBron and AD around, or the guy who in games five and 4 and 5, particularly in the playoffs, was bad? I mean, like,
or was he at his best when he was playing off the bench in OKC, often alongside Chris Paul and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, both of whom are better than him, and he was slotted perfectly in a way that he's not going to be, at least in his mind, with the Lakers. So I think all of that is going to be really interesting moving forward.
All right. So that actually lends itself really well to the final topic of the day. We talked on Monday's show a lot about how enthusiastic the players were about running it back. Should Lakers management be as enthusiastic as the players? We'll do that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online, the fastest, easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season's in full swing. You can track all the action at Bet Online this week. Tons of sports action on the go. Get all the latest news, odds, info for your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, UFC, MMA. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device. Check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get into the game as teams are neck deep in the playoffs. Head to the website, use your mobile device, sign up today, receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit using the promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Quick reminder before we get into our last topic of the day, do sign up, subscribe to Locked On Lakers on YouTube. Not only do you get the podcast there, but you can also get all kinds of YouTube exclusive content, which we're putting up, all the interviews that we're doing and all throughout the offseason. We're going to be populating that with some fun stuff. So do make sure you sign up for the Locked On Lakers channel at YouTube. This happens most years, not every year. Most years, players are like, yeah, if we all come back, we're going to do better next year. Bring it back. Let's all come. And then they all are happy to go sign contracts somewhere else. But for what it's worth, the Lakers on Friday at their exit interviews, as we talked about on Monday's show, pretty much to a man, unless that man is Montrezl Harrell, we're all very enthusiastic about the idea of coming back to do, you know, some unfinished business for next season. It's one thing for the players to want that, though, Andy. Is it a good idea for management to want to run it back next season?
Well, I mean, this is championship or bust. I mean, when you're dealing with LeBron continually advancing, Anthony Davis in his prime, the goal is to get to the finals. Reminder, today on the road to the finals, our NBA playoffs coverage brought to you, as always, by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. And at 2.6 carbs, 95 calories, we can all enjoy the games a little more this season. You could make an argument, Brian, that in terms of the players that they had, the players they didn't have, what they needed more than anything else this season and didn't get was health. Mm-hmm. Because before everybody started getting hurt, the Lakers were, I believe, 21-6 when Anthony Davis got injured. They were first or second in the West. Utah, I think, has been at the top
most
almost
of the year.
from start to finish. And they were managing to do this without going full bore on a regular basis. Like, remember last year, we expected them to kind of ease into what they were doing, you know, having to getting to know you period, all those different moving pieces.
Nope. They hit the accelerator from the beginning, and it was kind of shocking.
Right, and they didn't do it this year for very obvious reasons, because they had the quickest turnaround literally in NBA history, and you have to preserve some of that energy, ironically, to try to avoid getting injured. Which didn't end up happening anyway. So I think you can make at least a credible argument that the core of what you needed to go somewhere deep in the playoffs or actually defend the championship under normal circumstances were actually there.
I
guess the question is, how much of a prisoner of the moment are you with an incomplete sample size?
I think there are two things that I think about this with. The first one is, what is it? When you say run it back, like, which part of it are you talking about? Like, obviously, no team ever returns exactly the same. I mean, with rare exception, returns exactly the same every year. Somebody's going to go sign a deal somewhere else. Markieff Morris could get offered more. So Andre Drummond, if it gets twice, you know, whatever. If you're talking about it, obviously, it starts with LeBron James and Anthony Davis. That's coming back. It's going to be what it is. You know, the core with KCP is probably coming back. Kyle Kuzma, unless you make a big trade, theoretically coming back. You could, I think Alex Caruso and THT are likely to be re-signed, I think. You can start kind of assembling the core. Does that mean Wes Matthews comes back? I don't know. Does that mean, you know, there's some things with Harrell, whatever it might be. You have to also fix what the problems were. And this team did not shoot the ball well enough for now 2 years in a row. The shooting has been a problem. So if that's it, you can't run that back. That needs to get, and they had more wide open threes than like any team in the NBA, and they still missed way too many of them. That part of it needs to be addressed. The other part of it that I think is hard, and I asked this of Rob Pelinka, is getting eliminated as early as they did for reasons that were so glaringly obvious, Andy, you know, with health. That was the reason. Also robbed them of the opportunity to see like smaller stuff. Like, you get in the Western Conference Finals or the finals and you start to struggle and you lose, you can see, it's this little thing. It's that little thing. It's these two or three, four things that we need to tweak and get better at and go target. They never got a chance to see that stuff. So I would agree with you on the surface. Like, yeah, you could run this team back, and if they stay healthy, they'll be really good because they were great before everybody got hurt. But there are things that I think that are probably somewhere under the surface, under the hood, that they're going to have to do a really good job of diagnosing, or they could get into a situation next year where they advance and then find out, I really wish we'd fix that problem.
Okay, it's interesting you bring that up, because I actually did a bit of a precursory dive through some of the numbers. And, you know, obviously we have a lot of time, unfortunately, throughout this summer to even get further into the nitty gritty. But One thing that I thought was really interesting is that for all the talk about the three-point shooting this season, and it certainly was not lights out for this team, it was actually slightly better this season than last season. Like they, I mean, it was not great either year, but really what happened was in the playoffs, it cratered. Like it was
it cratered in the same way that it improved. You know, they were similar. You know, they got off to a great start shooting the ball this year, which did, I think, throw off the numbers a little bit. But
even then, though, throughout the regular season,
I'm not debating your point.
I know. I'm just clarifying for people listening.
They were similar, and we talked about it last postseason that, you know, it could go either way. They improved when it mattered, and this year they cratered when it mattered. But overall, they need to be better.
They do. They absolutely do. But one thing that I thought was really interesting, though, going through some of these numbers, is that where things really fell off was the two-point field goals, not the three-point. And some of this, I'm sure, is Anthony Davis's inability to replicate what he did in the mid-range last year. And frankly, AD's season being kind of disappointing on balance as a whole. But one thing that was really interesting that stuck out to me was the drop-off in putbacks. And their ability to get points off that. Last season, they were in almost the 97th percentile for putback points. This year, just under 87%, which put them in the top 10. But a 10% drop-off
it's enough.
Noticeable. The points per possession with putbacks was worse. Frequency of conversion, all lower. And I bring this up because this is an area where Dwight Howard was actually missed. For all the talk about what he did defensively and what it looked
like. I've been screaming this all season long that the where they missed JaVale and Dwight wasn't on defense, it was on offense. Because
between lobs,
and what you're talking about there, lobs and putbacks were 8 easy points a game that they didn't get this year.
Right. Specifically with Dwight for putbacks. JaVale actually was not great at
all. No, but he was a great lob.
He was a lob threat. Yeah, absolutely. You want to take a guess, by the way, this season? Who had the best percentile for putbacks on the Lakers? Like the highest percentile across the league, comparatively. Who on the Lakers best?
I feel like it's like somebody you wouldn't suspect. Alphonso McKinney.
No. Guess somebody real.
You would think it would be somebody like Trez or... Yeah, you would think it would be somebody like Trez. I'll say somebody like Trez.
Trez was second. Trez was almost 85th percentile. LeBron, number one.
How about that?
87. Third was 80 at 77. From there, next was Keith at around 55-ish percent. LeBron finishing number one, while certainly admirable for LeBron, yet another example of the offense being totally dependent on LeBron.
I think some of his own misses.
Sure, but whatever. I'm just saying, around the basket. Yet another way this offense was dependent on LeBron in ways you may not have even realized. Yeah. The guy that really dropped off with putbacks was Kuzma. Last season, he was in the 90th percentile or thereabouts. This year, 22nd. But when you start thinking about, like, and the reason I bring this up was in particular what you were asking Pelinka about with the things around the margins and the stuff that might not stand out. This could be the type of player that they could use, particularly if the offense doesn't smooth out, especially playing alongside AD. Like, that's the type of player that might matter when you think about running it back, not running it back, and who do you bring in instead of 2021 Laker X?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so this is the theme of the offseason. You know, running it back, personnel moves, Dennis Schroeder, Montrezl Harrell, Kyle Kuzma, all this stuff. This is what we're talking about over the course of the offseason. So start that conversation. Today, we'll run it through the rest of the week and into July and August and September. But we're excited to have everybody to do it with us, and we will see you on Wednesday.